This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, happy New Year's Eve, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek, and you're listening to the Horses in the Morning Show on the Horse Radio Network. This is 12/31/2014, episode 1073. Good morning, Horse World, on this last day of the year. We hope you had a fantastic 2014, and if you didn't, then we hope 2015 is better for you coming up. I have a show planned for you today. I thought I would take a look back and find some of my favorite bits and pieces from 2014 and share them with you. So we have I have a variety of stuff going on here today, and I hope you enjoy it. I'll be chatting with you between the interviews here. So let's get started with some best of today. And let's get started with an interview that made Jamie a little nervous. And this was back in June. We interviewed Philip Dutton and Graham Motion. Let's take a listen.
Well, I am here with some very special guests, Glenn, and we have on the phone right now Olympian Philip Dutton and Kentucky Derby winning trainer Graham Motion. Good morning, guys.
Hi there. Good morning. How are we doing?
Well, we're doing fantastic. Thank you guys both so much for joining us. I don't think we've had this much star power on the line together ever. This whole thing might explode.
That seems unlikely.
Well, Philip, good morning. Where are, did we catch you on the back of a horse?
No, I'm sitting down, so you can ask me anything you want.
Oh man, watch out. And then Graham, are you at the track right now or are you home?
I am, yeah, we're actually training right now.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you guys have formed a partnership of sorts, and I was hoping you could maybe tell everybody what it is. Graham, if you want to get started.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it was really my wife's idea. It's something she's always wanted to do. We feel very strongly about taking care of the thoroughbreds after they're retired and finding other careers for them, and it's something that we've tried to do over the years, and it was, you know, we just had an opportunity with Ichabod Crane to actually do it ourselves, and we'd wanted to have a situation where we could send Philip a nice horse. We've actually tried to send him a couple before, but he's usually sent them back pretty quickly. So we like Ichabod Crane a lot. We really thought this was one that he would like and that we could all have some fun with. And it was nice that, you know, Earl Mack was generous enough to let Anita and I have him after his racing career was done. And so then it was up to Philip to see how he handled it.
So, Philip, he sends you this gelding, and what was your first impression?
Well, the first impression was good. I mean, I rode him in what we call our indoor arena, which there was a lot going on at the time, and usually is, lots of horses going everywhere. And he took it all in and looked at everything and handled himself really well. And so my first impression was that, you know, here's a really calm, cool gentleman that wanted to work and wanted to try something new.
So, how were you two originally introduced? Have you known each other for a long time? You're both kind of up in the same area. Is it just through big names kind of thing?
I mean, we're in the same area, so that was part of it. You go ahead, Philip.
No, I mean, I think, you know, obviously I heard so much about Graham, but then through mutual friends, we got to know each other a bit more and had a lot in common, and it was sort of branched out on a, you know, semi-business partnership as well, and, you know, it's been incredible for Evie and I to sort of work with Graham and Anita and, you know, get to know what they do a little bit more, and you know, and obviously Ichabod Crane, and we all have the same goals in that we believe, really believe, and owe a lot of our careers to the American Thoroughbred. You know, obviously in different ways, and I've ridden lots of American thoroughbreds in my sport and to the Olympic Games a couple of times. And so, it's certainly an area that, you know, is becoming, a lot of people are paying a lot more attention to it now, what happens to the horses after they race. And it's sort of neat for us to be able to show a horse that actually spent years and years racing and was very, very good at it, and see what he can do attempting another sport. And it's not an easy ask either, because if in human terms it would be like a great runner trying to become a really top class tennis player or baseball player or whatever. And it's very rarely that done to try to get the highest level in two sports. And so what the little guy's trying to do, it's pretty remarkable, and he's off to a great start with it.
Well, and we'll definitely get to that, but what do you think, Philip, backing up, what sort of traits do you look for in an off-the-track thoroughbred to become a successful eventer?
Right, well, honestly, it's...
By the way.
Sorry?
I said I'm taking notes, by the way.
Right. Well, I mean, sort of look for maybe what you might call an old style of thoroughbred horse, so a big-boned, raw-boned, what we call nice, big, moving horse, so a horse that when he trots, he covers the ground and spends time in the air when he moves. And the disposition is one of the keys, and that is, that they can accept training and riding on a daily basis. And it's obviously such a different life for the horse. There's so much emphasis in the race off at galloping, and what we teach them is, completely different, and so they have to spend a lot more time with the rider every day, and it takes a long time to teach a horse, so, we're talking years and years, and so having a horse that can handle that kind of training mentally is probably the key, and obviously a horse that naturally can jump, and there's a lot that goes into picking the horse, but, I would say that his attitude to the new job is probably the most important.
And do you find, Philip, Grandma, I'll get to you in just a second, sorry, as Igabad raced until he was six, do you find that it's harder to transition the kind of older thoroughbreds into a new career? And do you have any advice for those of us who might be dealing with one of those challenges in my backyard, our backyard right now?
Right. Well, I think every horse is an individual, and I think a lot of the way that Ichabod's disposition is a credit to Graham and how he's handled the horse, and so he hasn't, what you call fried his brain. And so, I think every horse is different in where they've raced and how many times they've raced, and ideally, I guess, from my point of view, the less racing is probably better. They've got less wear and tear on them, and not maybe set in their ways. But having said that, I don't think it's affected Ichabod one little bit. Racing for 4 or 5 years, I think, as far as from my point of view, anyway, he's transitioned beautifully.
And Graham, what do you think? I almost feel like you're a little bit of a pioneer in keeping track of your ex-racers and trying to make sure that they're going to places and having careers. What do you think was the kind of, why are you so different than the rest of the trainers? Is it your wife that makes you keep track of all of them? I feel like there's not enough of that in the game, and I applaud you for it.
Well, I think we're seeing it more and more. I mean, I'd like to think there's a lot of us out there now that are really keeping our eyes on the horses after they leave us. And I think Philip touched on it. These thoroughbreds, they give us so much, and I think this is just an opportunity for us to give them something back, and it's something that my wife and I feel very strongly about. And Sue, in my front office, she's been very... she's been a big part of placing horses in the area. Fortunately, we're in an area where it's not hard to place horses, whether it's fox hunting or showing or just, taking for trail rides. It's very easy to find homes for horses around here, and it's something we believe in, and, we try to keep track on some of the horses that we lose in training races. It's very hard to keep track on all of them, but We put a sticker on the passports or the papers for all our horses so that, you know, people can get in touch with us if they find one of our horses in an awkward situation. So it certainly is something we feel strongly about, but I think it's something that the industry as a whole is much more aware of nowadays.
Wow, that's awesome. So you put a sticker just on the papers from wherever they go, they can always kind of make their way back to you. I know that you have a like Racing Warriors page on your website, and tell us about some of the other second careers your retirees have.
Yeah, I mean, there's several of them, and it's hard for me to remember all of them. We had a nice horse called Better Than Bonds, who's actually his owner recently passed away, but he was one of our favorite horses, and he went on to, you know, a decent show jumping career. And I think there's been several of them that have done similar things. But it's not even so much the ones that go on to the bright lights as perhaps the ones that have become, you know, really fun hunters for families to have and to get a lot of pleasure out and for the horses to get pleasure out of.
Wow. I mean, I just love that you do that, and you're making it the norm to keep track of these guys and to find them different careers. So Philip, back to Ichabod, what do you see for him in the future? I know you've done some beginner novice and you're thinking of taking him. Have you done a novice with him yet?
Yeah, so he's done two novices now. So he's moved up one level, and I would anticipate that he'll be ready to move up another level by the end of the year. You know, he's a pretty quick study in our terms. I mean, in racing terms, you know, it probably seems very slow, but he's really taken to it. And I certainly do not want to push him past what he's ready to do, but I think that he'll be more than ready for the next level by, you know, I would say, you know, October, something like that.
See, I feel especially, I don't know if it's just out here on the West Coast, but I feel like a lot of people get these horses, and I don't know how they do it, but they really rush them up through the levels. Like, I took lessons with somebody that didn't believe in ever going beginner novice, and I really think that that level was put into eventing for a reason, and I appreciate that you are taking your time with him. Not that my opinion matters, but I really do. I think it's great what you're doing. Philip, how many of your horses in your barn would you say are off the track thoroughbreds?
Not as many as before. I mean, certainly with the value of event horses now, there's a big push for what, you know, you might call sport horse breeding, and so. But I would say probably 25% of mine are, you know, 20 to 25% of the thoroughbreds off the track. And, you know, we're certainly, you know, I think it's fair to say if you do get the best thoroughbred, the right type of thoroughbred, that, you know, you've got a partner that's going to be pretty special and try really hard for you. So we're always on the lookout. I mean, it's just, you know, it is a special horse that we need, certainly for the upper levels of eventing. And so just they're hard to find, not just as event as thoroughbreds, but any kind of horse, they're hard to find. You know?
Right. Now, on a personal note, Graham and Philip, I'll ask Graham this first. What is your favorite horse that you've ever worked with? Was it Animal Kingdom?
You know, it's so hard because the horses like Animal Kingdom and Better Talk Now, you know, they did so much for my career professionally, and you know, they were also horses that you become very attached to for that reason. So, but the horses like Ichabod Crane, I mean, he was a hard-knocking horse himself, and, you know, the reason that we really felt he'd do well with Philip was because of his nature and his disposition, and he was always sort of a barn favorite for everybody, and we just felt that he'd be a really good fit. We have a filly right now called Inimitable Romani, who's really stepped up this year and won several graded stakes. I'm hoping she could be a Breeders' Cup type horse, and she has a very similar disposition, just a very kind, easy horse to have around, and she's now a six-year-old. So obviously the longer you have them around, certainly the more you become attached to them.
Well, you certainly know your way around the Breeders' Cup wins, especially the filly and mare turf. In 2010, you took that one. So you're the guy to go to for that. Philip, this must be a tough question for you, but who do you think is your favorite horse?
Yeah, actually, it's not a tough question. So I flew over to this country with a horse called True Blue Girdwood, who was an Australian thoroughbred, but he was by a American Sky called Loosen Up, and he took me to my first Olympics, and I would think if he didn't come around, I'm not sure my career would be where I got to today. So without doubt, he was with me when I didn't have any other horses, and so he sort of started me down this road. So that one stands out to me.
Yeah, heard of him.
well, Graham, one final question. We'll let you guys go. How, the excitement, we did this whole entire show about the Triple Crown and about California Chrome. Is it really important for racing that we get this win this weekend? Just the excitement around this horse has been more than we've seen it in recent years, certainly.
I mean, I think it's an extraordinary amount of pressure on the horse and the connections. I think just the fact the attention it's brought in the last 3 weeks is great for the game. You know, unfortunately, it's going to be really tough for him to win this race, and I'll be rooting for him as much as anybody, but there's a reason that it hasn't been done for a long time, and there's a couple of really nice, fresh horses coming in here on Saturday that are going to make it hard for him. But I think just the attention he's brought in the last few weeks is good for the game. I'm not sure that it's going to be the big cure-all that racing sort of believes it might be if he does win the Triple Crown, but obviously it'll be a big shot in the arm.
Oh, my gosh, I can't believe the coverage. It's like every day I log onto the Blood Horse or Facebook, and it's like, California Chrome gets a bath. California Chrome goes and eats grass. I'm like, I can't imagine the amount of pressure. It's like paparazzi surrounding you all the time all of a sudden. Graham, I'm sure you dealt with quite a bit of that with Animal Kingdom. Does that detract from the whole thing, or does it pump you up a little bit?
I tell you, it's tough. I mean, I can't imagine what these guys are doing with, because for me, just the 2 weeks between the Derby and the Preakness was almost overwhelming. I felt very strongly about trying to do everything I could, because I think it's the one time where racing really gets the attention, and you kind of need to, we need to take advantage of that, if you like. So I tried to do everything I could as far as the media requests and what have you, and I think these guys have done an amazing job, and I really can't imagine how they've kept up with it, to be honest. It's a lot.
Philip, is your money on California Chrome?
Yeah, I hope so. It's like everybody, I've followed it, and I think it's such a neat story, just the way that these guys have come into it, and basically got this horse that any expert would have told you would be running and claiming races, and they've come through, and they seem like real characters as well. So.
And who doesn't want to see a bunch of dumbasses win the Triple Crown?
So great. Well, we're going to let you guys go. Philip, give everybody your website, and then Graham, you can too, just to let everybody know where to find out more. Philip, it is a dream of mine to ride in a clinic with you, so get out here to Phoenix as soon as possible, okay?
Yeah, I was just at Fresno in California, actually on the weekend. So, yeah.
18-hour drive, no big deal, I'll do it.
All right, yeah. Sure.
Philip, what's your website?
Just philipdutton.com.
See, there you go. And then Graham?
The same, grahammotion.com or herringswellstables.com.
There we go. We'll go ahead and put a link to those up on our Facebook page so everybody can just click to it and see the interesting stuff and the great pictures and stories. And you guys, I can't thank you enough for what you're doing for Ichabod and for racing and off-the-track thoroughbreds. You guys are, I'm so glad you're working together. You're pioneers.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, yeah, I think we're lucky to be in the position to do it, too. Yeah. Thank you.
And thanks for taking advantage of that. You guys, we'll talk to you again soon. Best of luck, Philip. We'll see you. We'll see you with the blue ribbon on in training soon.
Well, how cool is that? That is so cool.
Oh my gosh! I can die now.
You didn't panic. You were fine. You're fine.
My blood pressure's up. I've tried to remain calm all morning long. I almost feel like I've done a better show not drinking coffee this morning and trying to remain calm. How do you think I've done? Perky self, but I almost feel like I've been a little more clear.
You haven't been jittery? No, I thought
clear, less excitable.
I told you I was going to throw you under the bus, and I kind of did. But I asked one question at the end.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for that.
We kind of have a little chat going on in the background during the show, because we are at a major disadvantage of other morning talk shows, where they're sitting right across from each other. So yeah. They can point to each other or, you know, say, you next, and that kind of thing. Plus, they have 85,000 commercials that they play, so they can talk in between the commercials.
Yeah.
We don't have that luxury, and we can't see each other.
Behind the scenes here, Glenn and I have a chat going, and it's like, a couple more minutes, or we're going to play this song, or coming up next, and we just kind of talk about what's going to happen next. And during that interview, as I'm trying to listen to Philip, I'm like, Glenn, do you have anything? Glenn, got anything for Graham? Glenn, you got anything for Philip? Glenn's answer every time was, nope.
You're doing
nothing.
Great. I did put in you're doing great a couple times.
That's not you're doing great. It's you're doing great. Like, you keep going because I got nothing. Nope, nothing. Thanks, Glenn. But that was awesome.
Dawn,
those guys are just awesome. I mean, they're so
Dawn
cool.
Dawn Themes just typed in, you sounded very calm, great interview. So there. Oh. You did good. I would have ruined it. I had interrupted. It wouldn't have been as professional and smooth and, you know, like, you're a major pro. I'm just a schmuck. You know, I'm a worse husband.
You know, I would probably, if I would have known, I would have driven 18 hours to go to a clinic with Philip Dutton. So it's a good thing I didn't know about it.
You know, he is, I think I've interviewed him a couple times before in the past. And you know me, I don't get nervous for much. And Philip's so easy to talk to. But I got to tell you, those two are hard to tell apart. Accent-wise and voice-wise.
Dreamy accents at the same time. It was just perfect. And I was trying not to, like, you know, sexually harass our guests and stuff, but that was hot.
And we have to thank someone, too, because, you know, we don't thank her enough. Jennifer worked hard.
Jennifer.
I mean, about a thousand scales to put that together. So.
Yeah. Jennifer sends me an email. It's like, I've got 16 dates that we can try to get these guys on. How about Wednesday the 4th? And I was like, you know, that's the one date, like, you know, Lucas got shots yesterday. I didn't know if he'd be okay this morning. And she's like, I booked him for the 4th. Like, nutcracker. Chad's out there with him right now. He's been screaming this whole show. I thought I did pretty good keeping him under wraps, though. I'm like, husband, take the horse away. Take the baby away, not the horse.
So this is for Jennifer. Good job.
Yeah, I don't think anybody realizes how nervous Jamie was for that particular interview. Well, now, there was a date back in January, on January 29th, where it snowed in Atlanta, and Jamie went back to her roots of doing traffic in Atlanta on mainstream radio for 10 years and gave us a little bit of a traffic report.
Woo! Man, it is a heyday, but not here, thank God. But I cannot stand it. Looking at the photos and the videos and reading people's Facebooks that are in the Southeast right now, Glenn, are you abreast of what is going on in my former hometown of Atlanta, Georgia?
Yes, I am, and I saw the pictures. We posted them on Horses in the Morning this morning, and wow.
It is, they're just not equipped to deal with any sort of precipitation. I mean, I'm a former traffic reporter. I was a traffic reporter for 10 years in Atlanta, and this was like the most exciting time because it was like game time. This is what you train for, you know?
Well, let's hear a little of it.
Okay, so I did write a traffic report just by looking at this map. That's all I had is this map of Atlanta. It's like a real-time traffic map, and I would use it to write my reports back in the day. So are you ready to be impressed? This is an actual current situation in Atlanta, Georgia right now. People are sleeping in their cars. There was a baby delivered on the side of the freeway yesterday because they couldn't get home. So here's the traffic report from Atlanta, Georgia, currently, right now. And this is what I would do. They'd hit the little traffic with Jamie Massey. I would say, if you can, don't go anywhere. If you're already out on the roads, here's what you're going to see besides brake lights. On the inner loop of 285, starting on the north side, 285 is currently shut down at Riverside Drive. Also, all lanes are blocked at Peachtree Industrial Boulevard, 141 La Vista Road in DeKalb County, and the westbound outer loop is shut down at Flat Shoals, then again at Paces Ferry, and again on the west side at Bolton Road. Looking at the downtown connector northbound, it's shut down at the Grady Curve, and southbound is a parking lot from Georgia 400 all the way south down to the airport. I-20 is closed, ramping onto the connector, making your way onto 20. It's stop and go from Douglasville past Six Flags all the way into downtown. 75 south in Cobb County has all lanes blocked at 575, and then again at Delk Road. And making your way over to DeKalb County, the Stone Mountain Freeway is shut down at Hugh Howell. Also south of that in Rockdale County, I-20 is closed at Turner Hill. Heading to the south side of town, 75 northbound at Flat Shoals Road is currently closed. Coming up in 10 minutes, we're going to go over the surface streets. I'm Jamie Massey on The Bird Show. All the hits, Q100.
I love when she goes into traffic weather mode. She just gets right in the groove. After all this time, she still remembers how to do it. Well, another favorite interview we had this year, we did a whole series of interviews from Woodbine Racetrack, a little behind-the-scenes look there, and we had an unexpected interview that turned out to be a whole very interesting and a whole lot of fun. And that was with Chaplain Sean Kennedy, who is the chaplain at the racetrack. Had some interesting stories to tell. So let's take a listen to that.
Awesome. Well, hey, our first guest is here, Glenn, and I know, you know, we've been doing these segments called Behind the Scenes at Woodbine, kind of getting the behind the scenes of people at the racetrack in Canada called Woodbine, and getting an idea of what life is like around a track. And, you know, there's sometimes you don't realize exactly what is going on behind the track, because if you would have given me $1,000, I never would have guessed that they actually have these people behind the scenes at racetracks. Do you want to introduce them?
Sure. We have Sean Kennedy. He's been there for 10 years, and he is a chaplain at the racetrack and runs the chaplaincy there. And, you know, one of the things that you don't realize is that there are over 2,000 racetrack workers, and there are 200 to 300 that actually live there. So there's a whole city that goes on behind the scenes. We're there just betting at the windows and cheering for the horses. We don't see that whole side that goes on. Well, there's one guy at Woodbine that definitely sees it all, and it's Sean. Good morning, Sean.
Good morning, Glenn.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. I know it's been a busy week, and you have a busy race coming up here, but we appreciate you taking time out to join us. You know, what I said is true. Most of us that are on the front side just doing our betting and losing our money and watching the horses go around, don't realize all the things that go on. It really is a city back there.
Absolutely. It's, you know, this is maybe the best-kept secret in most cities in North America. You know, starting from about 4 in the morning, this place is just a beehive of activity, you know, and people working here, and like we say, 2,000 people every day.
I read a couple articles that you have done in the past, and you've been there for 10 years, and you've been running the chaplaincy there for a long time. Tell us a little bit about what does most of your day consist of? And I know you work on the back end with all those staff and workers there. So what are the common things that you're dealing with there every day?
Well, most issues here are no different than in everyday life. People are concerned about their future, they're concerned about their families, they're concerned about their finances, they're concerned about the future of racing, and that on top of all the things they have to deal with in looking after horses as well. Most people here work 6 or 7 days a week. It's manual labor, so there is a lot of physical stress put upon people. And I think one of the things that when people first come to the backstretch and see the people that work here and just drive through the barn area is the amount of people that limp when they walk or just kind of shuffle when they walk. After a while, physical work takes a real toll on you. So that kind of breaks down people after a while, and then the emotional, spiritual, and intellectual things kick in after that. There, aside from the things that we do every week, there's no typical day, really. We do a chapel service every Tuesday. We have a Bible study every Wednesday. We put on 4 barbecues in the summer. We just take our chapel service on a Tuesday and take it outside and open it up with all kinds of food and good stuff. I marry people, I bury people, I baptize babies, and I have one suit for all three, so it works out pretty good. And, you know, it's just an ongoing thing of how people are coping every day. People have, again, you know, there are issues that they deal with. There are, you know, substance abuse issues and what have you. They're not getting along with their spouse. They're not getting along with their boss. people just want to have somebody they can come and talk to and is just going to listen to them. The other side of it, which makes it no usual day, is we had an unfortunate incident here on Tuesday where both a horse and a rider were killed in the same accident. So this is, you know, this puts everything else on hold for the week kind of deal, and you're focused primarily on that.
Yeah, that's something that unfortunately in our world, I mean, we deal also with the competitive side, and it, you know, that happens, and it's something that that in the horse world we have to deal with you know, all the time, and I can't imagine having to do your side of it. One of the things too that that you said in an article, and I found this very interesting, is you, when the reporter asked you a question, you said one of the biggest things that you have to deal with, and that the people that live especially on the backside have to deal with, is loneliness. So here we have all of these people surrounded by all of these people and horses, and yet that loneliness is the one thing you brought up, which I found very interesting.
It is. You know, it's kind of the thing. There's all this activity going around. It's the old line, you know, you could be more alone in a crowd than by yourself kind of deal. And so you've got all this going around, but all the energy is focused not on the person themselves, but on the horses, the job, and the goal is to get the job done. At the end of the day, and this is where most problems occur, is in downtime when people are alone. If they're living in a tack room here, we have a dormitory here. Tack room, that's old school. But, you know, if they're living in the dorm here, sometimes they have
beds now?
they actually have beds, you know, maybe carpet, I'm not sure. But, you know, maybe they've got a roommate and everything like that, but it's a roommate. It's not a, you know, not necessarily a close friend and what have you. And at the end of the day, it's a lot of people just go home tired, eat something if they're lucky, you know, fall asleep knowing that they're going to start it all over again the next day. And that's the tough part, is those times when they're just sitting there, and sometimes people turn to all kinds of things that, you know, that they may feel are helping them but doesn't. And so that's kind of the thing you have to deal with, is making sure... you know, there's something, number one, something for people to do. Now, it doesn't mean I go around, I'm the, you know...
You're not the policeman,
I'm not on the love boat making sure everybody, you know, has a fun time and everything like that. But when we do things like our barbecues, you know, the response we get, especially from security, is at least they know where people are for about 2 hours, and they're going to be okay, they're safe, they're eating, you know. But it is during the downtime that's toughest, and that's when people, you know, they take stock of their life, they take stock of where they are and everything like that. Some people turn to substances, some people gamble, some people just, you know, harm themselves. So it's something that that we're aware of, and what you try to do is connect with people during the day and make sure just that they're doing okay.
You, one of the articles I read said that the tracks that have a chaplaincy, that have a chaplain on staff and actually there all the time, actually sees a good deal less problems on the backside than tracks that don't. Is that true?
Yes, it is. And, you know, I met the sergeant from Division 23, which is our local police division here, and he didn't know I was the chaplain at the time or didn't put two and two together. And I was at a meeting with him, and he just kind of mentioned, he said, you know, we used to come here all the time, and it was almost every day we had an incident here. We had to come, you know, send a squad car out for and what have you. He says, it's not so much anymore. And I said, oh, really? I said, how long has that been going on for? He says, for about the last 10 years. So there's just something to be said for a presence of a person, right, that is here. You know, that I don't enforce anything. I have no punitive powers, but sometimes because we're experiencing such a shortage of workers, sometimes, you know, what they'll do is rather than just, for instance, kick a person off, which in 75, that's the first year I was here on Woodbine as an exercise rider. If you had a problem, they just kicked you off, threw you in a ditch and forgot about you. Now they look at more, rehabilitation. And so, okay, you can work, but you have restrictions. You know, normally you'd be tossed off or what they call trespass. But, you know, as long as you get counseling and you can keep your job and, you know, as long as you keep your nose clean, you'll be fine. And that's a real big difference I've noticed about security here and the whole attitude of people here.
Well, that says a lot for you, too, as an individual. I mean, it's true that, you know, having somebody there will help, but having the right person there is the ideal situation. That's going to help the most.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, you started as an exercise rider, so you understand what they go through, too. I mean, that's the other side of it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. No, and I mean, the racing's in my blood. I was born into it. So, you know, I've trained horses and what have you and trained for 10 years. And then up to last year, I was still galloping horses. So, yeah, you know how people feel, what they go through because you've been there. And they, you know, when they see you on a horse, they know you're not just, blowing smoke when you say, I understand how you're feeling.
Well, and you gained a lot of respect with them that way, too. If you hadn't ridden and hadn't done that, then you wouldn't have had the respect that you have now with that particular group. So I have to ask you a light question here to get change topics altogether. So when you do the baptisms, are they done in a water trough? Just because?
Not necessarily, but we make do with what we have, exactly. I'll tell you what we did one time. One couple who I knew from, I'm originally from Western Canada. I knew them from Western Canada, and they were here, and they wanted to get their son baptized. I said to them, well, you guys ever thought about getting married? You know, because they've been together forever. And they're, well, yeah, sort of, but we don't have the time. And that's usually, you know, that's the number one answer, right? I said, well, why don't we do both? So and they were at the Fort Erie racetrack. So, I said, I'm going to be down on Monday. After I was done there, we drove to Niagara Falls. I baptized their baby, and then the heavens opened, and it just poured down. So either way, we were getting baptized, no matter what.
Everybody. But it was, everybody.
Run for the trees. But it was, you know, it was neat. And the amazing thing is when I do something like that, I see the people as a difference from a minister in a church. I see the people, you know, at least 6 days a week. So you can kind of see when things are going rough, you know, and you can just kind of stop by and just, you don't have to say much. In fact, the best thing I can do is say nothing and allow them to speak, you know.
Right.
And so that way I stop by 5 minutes, okay, stop by another 5 minutes on the next day, stuff like that. And eventually you start getting down to the core issues. So that's the difference of a chaplaincy as opposed to a church ministry.
Now, you guys have a big race coming up here. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, we have the Queen's Plate coming up. And this is our kind of the Canadian equivalent to the Kentucky Derby. So it's on July 6th. And it's $1 million race. And this is kind of our showcase race for the year. This is... when the Queen comes, this is the one she comes for because it's named after her. So it's a big deal here.
Now, what do you do? What's you still your role the same, or do you have some do you have to bless the horses? I mean, is there something special that you do on for this particular day?
Well, not really. There are some horses even God can't help. So that's just a given. You know, they're better off doing something else, you know.
Oh,
God made
geez.
Them to be a horse, but not a running horse, that's all.
I'm going to have to use that quote for the rest of my life there. Just some horses God can't help.
Exactly. Well, and then, you know what? That gets me out of a lot. Gets me out of a lot of situations right there. So, the big deal is that on the Queen's Plate Day, actually, is just being there. We usually have a lot more jockeys in the jock room, and I pray with the jockeys before the races, and being available. It's a, much like any big day, Derby, Breeders' Cup, stuff like that, there's some tension and some pressure. So you're just kind of there. You don't do a whole lot. You're just there, and you just, you know, be available. And I don't know, I think it's like having like Lassie in the room. You know, everybody just wants to, you know, feels better looking over at the dog, you know. And in the same way, if I can be there and just kind of bring a settle things down, then that's a good thing.
Now, Sean, by the way, the horses that God can't help are currently in my backyard. Just so you know.
Exactly. Exactly. You know what? And it would that would be a great name for a farm, right? And the horses, God can't help farm. So you can run with that. No charge.
That's a great racehorse name, too. God couldn't
sure,
help
absolutely.
Me.
Yeah, no one can.
I love absolutely. It. I love it. Well, hey, yeah. I've got to ask. I was an exercise rider at Keeneland, and I do remember when there were some grooms in our barns that slept in the tack rooms, and whether or not they were supposed to or not. But you know, and you're right. It is such a culture and such a small community in the backside
absolutely.
Of a racetrack. But just listening to what you do for the people that work there is inspiring. How many racetracks have chaplaincies? Is it very common? Is it a Canadian thing? Did I miss out when I was a worker? Like, what?
No, the Racetrack Chaplaincy of America has been around for almost, I think, 30 years now. So it's more of a common thing in the States because you've got 10 times the people we do. Our tracks are spread out across, you know, the second biggest country in the world, unfortunately. So we don't have as many chaplains, but I would suggest that we have as many chaplains per capita. Maybe, but I think there's about 60 to 70 in the States, and we have about 4 or 5 here up in Canada, but they also wear hats as counselors and what have you. And we do have a chaplain for the standard bred side as well.
No kidding. Yeah, I mean, it's the same. They might have a different tack, but it's the same lifestyle, definitely,
absolutely.
That's happening.
Yeah.
Standard bred tracks. Yeah. And, you know, unfortunately, I was witness to some of the abuse, you know, with drugs and alcohol and stuff like that. And unfortunately that happens, but fortunately it sounds like you are kind of, you know, everybody and you keep an eye on them. And what you said about seeing them on a day-to-day basis and then kind of being able to understand that something's probably going on, you know, that's compassion that these people probably haven't had very much of in their entire life. And it's really inspiring to hear you talk about that. And it makes me feel good to know that there is somebody that is looking out for these people, having had friends that did live that lifestyle.
Oh, absolutely. There is, there's some people that just function with their addictions here and will never be, for lack of a better term, never be sober. But so you work with
which is true in general life too. I mean,
it,
yeah,
exactly.
True anywhere.
Yeah. So you just work with that, and you know, unfortunately, for some of them, their addictions catch up with them and they pass away. I believe everybody deserves to be buried with dignity because you know, if God took the time to make them, no matter what their life was like, I want to honor the fact that God took the time to create them, and so it's. In instances where perhaps before there would be a rent a chaplain, for lack of a better word, or the person wouldn't get buried, the state would just bury them. You know, we have a service, and for instance, the fellow that passed away on Tuesday, we have a memorial service on the track on Monday. You know, it gives people a chance to come together and feel normal like the rest of the world, you know.
Right.
It's normal to have a funeral outside of the gates of Woodbine, so therefore it's normal to, we want to make that normal too. And a lot of people don't have next of kin. Most times they put down on a license application, they put the trainer's name down as next of kin because they don't have a next of kin.
Right. Wait, that's what I'm saying. A lot of times these people haven't seen compassion in their entire life because that's how, unfortunately, they were raised or the life that they led before they got into the racetrack lifestyle. And I do think that a lot of times the racetrack provides people somewhere to go, you know, and it provides
absolutely.
Them a life that they wouldn't have outside the gates of a Woodbine. And I love the fact that you're doing what you're doing and the chaplaincy has become such a big part of it. How many people, I know we're going to wrap here in just a second, but how many people do attend like a Bible study out of everybody there? How many people do attend on a weekly basis on average?
Well, we have a multi-purpose room here called the Jake Howard Center and it's got a clothing depot. It's got my office, it has a computer room, so we have Wi-Fi and everything, and a library here. And this is where we have our study time. So we usually get about 10 to 12 people, and we provide a lunch. And and you know what? We always say to them, you don't have to stay. You can eat your lunch and go. We don't care. It doesn't hurt us. And most times people stay, you know. And so we have that going on a Wednesday, maybe about more on our chapel services on Tuesday night. I think we, you know, on April, chapel night landed on April Fool's 1 year. So I announced in the morning, free beer at chapel tonight. And we had a huge turnout. a disappointed turnout, but a huge turnout nonetheless.
Broke a record.
Nonetheless. But the key thing about a chaplaincy and the different, you know, a church lives and dies for Sunday morning. But the chaplaincy, even though these are little points along the week, the big thing is connecting with people during the week on the, you know, the 6 days that I'm here on the week.
Just being there for
them. Yeah. And it is. And it's just, I tell people, it's like, it's not Indy 500. It's a rally race. You have to make the rally points in a rally race. We have to go back and start over. So I just try to make the next point and the next point and the next point and then start it all over again instead of pedal to the metal and, you know, get there as fast as I can kind of thing. So that's kind of the method that I use and the goals that I set for myself.
Well, I got to tell you two things before we wrap up here. One is you get our quote of the week because of all of our shows here on the Horse Radio Network, you get the quote of the week. We're gonna cut that little one out and we're gonna play that one occasionally.
Okay.
And
you haven't asked me about the G word, and not God, gambling.
Well, that's what's coming next. And I read one of the articles where you're asked almost every day, and I really want to know how often are you asked for the picks for the day, because obviously you have the direct phone line.
Well, and this is the thing, I tell people, you know, people think I have inside information. Other than, if I did, number one, I'd be dressed a lot better. And drive a lot better, for one thing. But I often get people like, how can you justify being a chaplain in a place that lives and dies on gambling? And that was my first number one answer.
See, I never thought about that, Sean, because I thought about it as a place that needs it more than anybody.
Absolutely.
You know?
But most churches don't see it that way. They don't see the people part. They just see the front side, you know, and the frenzied gambling side kind of thing.
I'm sorry. I find that so hypocritical, because here you are, you know, you're reaching out to the people that need you the most, and yet we send mission students to, you know, Africa to talk to the people that have never been introduced to God. And
sure.
There are plenty of mission things that happen and all around the world. And the fact that you're at a racetrack, I think I'm proud of you guys and what you're doing there at a racetrack, as opposed to they have to come to us, they have to walk in, they have to put money in the thing, in the coffers, and sit down and listen as you're out there reaching out to people. Sorry, soapbox. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. my old quote used to be, you know, there's no verse in the Bible that says gambling's a sin, and it's true. There is none, you know. Could you do better things with your money? Sure, but then the only difference between what a groom wears here at the racetrack and what a stockbroker wears is the clothes. They're both dealing with risky business. But, you know, a church will welcome a stockbroker in, and, you know, as opposed to looking down on somebody in shabby clothes and what have you. So, you know, that's the thing, that people have a place they can go, they can feel comfortable, they can feel, you know, at the end of the day, I hope that people know that God loves them. And, you know, doesn't care how they look, how they smell, how they act. God loves them.
In the Bible, Jesus didn't just talk to the rich and well-dressed people. He reached out to the people that needed him the most. And so that's just the last thing I'll say on it. Good for you. I'm glad that you see it that way, Sean.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And it, you know what? It's, well, I wouldn't last here if I didn't. So. I pulled my lack of hair out. So,
well, Sean, we're saying prayers for the loss that you have this week, and
thank you
for you for what you have to do on Monday. So,
appreciate it.
You know, bless everybody involved there. It's woodbineentertainment.com, is the website if you want to find out more, woodbineentertainment.com. Do you have a particular website? You have a chaplaincy website for for the association, right?
Yeah, ours is, www is rtccanada.com. So rtccanada.com.
Thank you, Sean. We appreciate you joining us. It's been very enlightening. Thank you.
Thank you.
My pleasure. All right, we'll talk to you. Bye-bye.
Easy Signs Online is the official sign company of the Horse Radio Network. This week's product highlight are their personalized nameplates. Perfect for horse stalls, tack rooms, lockers, bedroom doors, dog kennels, or whatever you can think of. Choose from hundreds of online graphics to further customize the nameplates from EasySignsOnline.com. Made from 1/2-inch thick, solid PVC signboard, these colorful and unique one-sided nameplates are 3.5 inches by 16 inches and are designed for durability, long-term indoor or outdoor use. They are only $39.95 each, and remember, free shipping on most orders over $100. Visit them at EasySignsOnline.com. Well, coming up next, you know, Jamie spends a lot of time complaining about her pets and all the things they get into. I had a listener say the other day, she leads such an interesting life. I think that's a good way to put it. Well, one of the pets that she went on a rant about one morning was Frank the cat, and it was very funny. So take a listen. This is back in April.
All right. So, you know, having a baby, it's really hard to sleep, and pretty much from about month 6 of being pregnant up until, I don't know, he's 10 months, and I think I've slept through the night once. You know, but it's not the baby, Glenn, that I'm losing sleep over recently. And I need to ask you guys your opinion on what to do about Frank the cat, okay? Those who don't know, I have a cat. He's very pretty. He's white. He's got blue eyes. He's not deaf. He's a great, normally a great cat.
Is this the one that sleeps on the roof of the house, by the way? Is this the one that spends the entire day on the roof of the house?
I've never owned the same cat this long ever, okay? Like, I'm not a real big cat person. This one just won't go away, so he just sticks around, so he's our cat. but his name is Frank, but now he's effing Frank the cat, and effing in my house is not edited. Because effing Frank the cat, at some point in the middle of the night, be it midnight, 1 a.m., 2 a.m., even, you know, I mean, I go to bed at like 9, so it could be even be like 10 p.m., I don't know. He starts meowing to go outside and picks the, you know, whatever door is closest to where my bed is and starts meowing constantly to go outside. And it gets to the point where I'm like, I throw things at him. The baby's in the crib. I don't care if it wakes up the baby. I just want the cat to shut up. So I throw things across the room at the cat. Eventually, I can't take it anymore, so I go and I let the cat out, of course. But the cat won't go out before bed, right? He's nowhere to be found before I go to sleep. So let him out, and I'm like, phew, it's over. And then every morning at about 4 a.m., when my alarm clock goes off at 4:45, 4 a.m., here comes the cat again. And we have these French doors in our room that go out to the backyard. He comes, wherever I let him out, he comes all the way around to the French doors in the back of the house and starts meowing, meow, 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 and doesn't stop until I let him back in. So this is happening twice a night where I've got to let the cat out and then let the effing cat in. And effing Frank just won't shut up, and I don't know what to do. Chad's, of course, like, just kill him. Just kill him. Get rid of him, you know. I'm like, we're not going to do that to our cat, honey. He's lived with us for like 3 years. I don't care. I don't like the cat. I hate it. And of course, it doesn't wake him up. Of course not. What wakes him up is me yelling at the cat when it comes in the house. Because I'm not doing this alone. What do I do, you guys? I'm stumped.
I have the perfect solution for this, Jamie. Perfect.
Oh, good.
You know that really cool chicken coop that you made for your cool chickens?
Okay, I need real suggestions, Jennifer. Seriously, I'm not in good humor about this.
He likes the roof, right? why don't we build a crate on the roof?
There you go. Yeah. Okay, that's like herding cats. Here, come here, kitty, kitty, get in this little cage.
No, never let him out of the crate. He lives in the crate full time
on
the roof. Yes. Yeah. I like that.
You guys are not helpful at all. I will be, however, taking suggestions at jamie@horseradionetwork.com or on my Facebook page. Please help me. It's Horses in the Morning is a Facebook page. My personal, I don't care. Anybody who has an idea, I don't know what to do about this. Stupid effing cat with the stupid meowing toys.
And you know, we know exactly how, we have the beast, so we know exactly how you feel, because the beast has his annoying things. He does like that, too, usually in the middle of the night. He hasn't done them lately. I don't know why, but since we moved to this house, he's decided that he doesn't need to beat on our door 8 out of the 10 hours you're in your bedroom. So
you know why?
Why?
Because he heard you guys about to give him away before you moved to that house. He's like, oh, you were shopping for a home for him, and he's like, oh, God, I better lay low. This could be bad.
Are you saying another couple of weeks he's going to be beating on our door for 6 hours a night again?
He might be. Yeah. Who knows? Oh, my God.
You know what
well,
we
if,
can
if
do?
That, if that will put a couple of free cat ads up on the telephone poles in your neighborhood, make sure that they're displayed where Frank can see them. That's a great idea. Okay, that's the best suggestion.
That's a convincing ad, though.
How about
the cat will recognize a big cat.
How about we have this affiliation with Pet Life Radio, who do all of these different shows on different pets. We should get. They have a cat, crazy cat lady. I think. I don't think they call her that. Sorry, I don't know her name. But they have a crazy cat lady.
Call her that.
We should get the crazy cat lady on to answer your questions.
Let's do it, Booker. I can't take it anymore. There's going to be a white cat on the side of the road with, like, one of those sticks, you know, with the handkerchief tied around it with all his belongings in it. Hitchhiking.
You know, everybody that's listening to this right now can relate to exactly what you're talking about. Everybody can.
Well, what did y'all do?
It's a freaking cat. What can you do? I mean, that's the crux of the problem. With our dog, we put her in the crate at night. She's happy. We can open the door, not open the door, whatever, close the door. She's happy either way. I don't know how to make a cat happy.
Maybe I put Boomer's shock collar on him. That's the best idea yet.
I'd be interested to see the video. If you could do a video, I'd be interested to see the video. I bet you that video gets more views than my pony video did.
Yeah, and then again, the sheriff's department comes over and knocks on my door and puts me in these beautiful silver bracelets, you know, so that'd be great.
Effing Frank. Everybody loves Effing Frank just because it leads to lots of stories, and we're all glad that we don't have to live with Effing Frank. Well, one more interview for you today, and then we'll call it a day, and wish everybody a happy new year and a safe evening tonight. Give your horses all a pat and a hug for us. We're going to leave you with an interview that Jamie set up and was very proud to have done it. We were one of the very few to interview him. There was a commercial last year's Super Bowl, which was very popular with the Budweiser commercial, and of course it was with Don Jeans. Everybody will remember that commercial in Chicago where the horses were in the city. Well, Don Jeans was the star of that commercial, and Jamie got an interview, and it was a lot of fun. So take a listen to this. We'll play the show out with this. Have a terrific Happy New Year, everybody. And we'll see you. We have another best of really bad ads for you on Friday. And then we'll see you back here Monday, live again on Horses in the Morning with Jamie, Jen, and
I don't know how to introduce him other than every single one of you guys knows who he is. And you're going to be hearing a lot more about him come Monday morning, because he is in the best Super Bowl commercial of all time. And I would like to welcome Don Jeans. Don, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Thank you so much for joining us. I'm sorry I've been stalking you for, I don't know, a year? Something like that?
Thank you for having me. And I'm glad we finally got connected.
I know. It finally just took us texting back and forth, I think, was the final way. So
Everybody listening right now, this Don is so famous. You've all seen him. You have now officially cried probably repeatedly because of him. Tell us about being the Clydesdale guy and the puppy guy now in the Super Bowl commercials.
Man, I got to tell you, I got the best job in the world. For the first year, I couldn't believe I got to go on set and work with horses every day. And then they brought me back for a second one, and they threw in a very lovely lady, Melissa Keller, and a puppy. I said, man, you guys are doing me a favor. You got everything but the kitchen sink in this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's really cool.
So if you're still not quite clued in, he was the guy that raised the Clydesdale baby, the greatest Super Bowl ad of last year, and the horse goes off.
The Chicago City scene there?
Yes, yeah. And the horse gallops back to him because they love each other. And I'm gonna go ahead and say that was real because emotionally I need to think that was real.
It was. Well then we'll run with it.
That was really your horse, and it really happened, and you read the paper, and you actually really went to see the Budweiser Clydesdales, and he really broke free and came galloping to you?
You got it. That was the most amazing day of my life.
So tell us about your new puppy, then, if we're going to go with it.
Oh, so yeah. So anyway, after that, obviously, my deal with Budweiser just got bigger and bigger, so they started buying more horses from Don Jeans, the horse breeder. And then I had this lady move in, you know, right down the street of the ranch down the road, and she raises and keeps these adopted Labrador retrievers. I mean, these beautiful little puppies, and it kept showing up at the barn. I couldn't figure it out, you know, because I'm a nice guy, but I'm about my business. So I can't have a little puppy wandering around the stables. Let's get this back to Melissa. And then, you know, when the horses stop it, they got a mind of their own. And you don't want to get in the way of a Clydesdale, all right?
Right.
So they stopped the car, and they got him out of there. And now his name is Ralph Waldo Emerson, but I call him Buddy.
Okay.
And we're having a good time. We're a big, happy family.
Oh my God, I love you more now. Thank you. Thank you for going with that.
Thank you for going with that.
Yeah.
So talking to about Don Jeep here, have you always been a horse guy?
I have. I was raised on a ranch right here in Houston, Texas, about an hour and a half north of Houston. And I'm sorry, I'm getting a little bit of feedback, but my dad was a rancher for 40 years. He passed away in 2005, God rest his soul. But my grandfather still owns a 1,000-acre ranch right here in Dayton, Texas, 30 miles north of Houston. And I've been working cows, fixing fence, working on the ranch for my whole life. When I was about 15, I rode bulls. And there's a country music musician who said he had about a 15-minute career, which is about what is it? Oh, gosh. 10 minutes on five bulls, or less than that, or five, 10 bulls at 5 minutes each, 5 seconds, 15-second career. I think that's about how long mine lasted, about 15 seconds, because my brother broke his collarbone, and I said, no, I don't want to do that no more. But I've always loved horses, and we always had quarter horses out of the ranch, and they're just...
I would bet your mother probably did not want you riding bulls after your brother broke his collarbone.
She did not, and he was driving, and I used that as an excuse. I said, oh, yeah, well, we can't get there, so I'm good.
Your poor mother. So you are still living near a ranch in Houston? Are you still in Houston?
No, ma'am. I'm in Houston to visit family on a little bit of a family emergency right now, but I live in Hollywood, California. And I go out on auditions every day. My main job is an actor.
Well, I've got to tell you that you're not pulling anything over on me, because I do know that you live on that Budweiser farm, but I also know that you're the handsome soldier in the Cuba Libre commercials.
That's right. That is right.
I saw that. I was like, wait, That's the guy that owns the Clydesdale.
He gets around.
That was my great grandfather. That was footage of him fighting in the Cuban American War.
Yes, yes. And the Penelope Cruz lookalike was his wife, right?
There you go.
Hey, Don. Don, I got to ask you, we owned an acting company for a long time, and we did improv. Have you been improv trained? The reason I ask that is you see so many of the top name actors in interviews, and they ask about the movie, and they can't even tell about the movie. You just did the most excellent descriptions of two of the commercials you were in than I've ever heard any actor ever do. So you must have been improv trained at some point or another.
Well, thank you, sir. You have got it. I did train at the Upright Citizens Brigade in New York. And I've got a friend I've known for a really long time, and people get around us and they're like, I'm not even going to try to keep up because we just go on these stories. One of my favorite pastimes is making up backstories for people I see on the street. So we'll just go off, and then we act out their lives after they've left. Pretty fun.
That's great. So the commercial that we're going to see this weekend, last year was you and the foal. This year was you, a puppy, the horse, and the girl. Next year, just to make all the women swoon, is it going to be you, a horse, a dog, the lady, and a little baby? I mean, to me, that's the natural progression.
You know what? Let's spread that rumor. Let's really lock Budweiser into it, because I would like to do another one.
I hope you get a dollar per play on YouTube for this commercial, because you'll be a rich man.
Oh, Lord, I wish I did. From your lips to God's ears.
I think it's up to $16 million views. And is there a reason that they would want to release it ahead of time to get people talking about it? Do you know why they would do that?
Well, from what I can surmise, obviously it's going to just build more interest before the Super Bowl. After the Super Bowl, people are still going to watch it, but leading up to it now, it's great marketing. You get more people interested in the commercial and watching it, more eyes on your product.
Are you getting recognized now for this ad?
You know what's weird is I look a little bit different without a hat on, and people look at me sometimes, but they don't know where they know me from. So I get about two or three glances, and then they shake their head and walk away trying to figure out if I'm their friend, cousin.
Listen, Don, all you need to do is throw on a ball cap and put on some jeans and boots, and you'll be swarmed, my friend.
Well, you know what? I got a little bit of a dilemma. I do have the ball cap from the commercial. They let me keep that, which is very nice of them. But I figure if I wore it around town, it'd be just a little bit too needy. So I keep that in the closet.
Dude, you live in Hollywood. It is the land of the needy, okay?
Yeah. That's true.
You're going to be just fine. Throw on the hat. Go to the grocery store.
That's right. Hey, how's it going?
Hey, John, can you tell us anything you have coming up?
I got a couple things. There's a movie that I did in the Amazon called Dark Amazon that is currently looking for distribution. I've got a short film that I did through the USC Thesis program. That's an artistic film that's going to be going to festivals. That is the story of a young singer who has lost her way, and I play her love interest. And interestingly enough, I don't know if you know who Mackenzie Phillips is.
Oh, sure do, yeah.
Yeah, she plays the mother in that one. And then I have another short film called Acaso, which was pretty big budget for a short film. And it literally translates to chance, and it's about a guy who's thinking about taking his own life. He's talked out of it by another guy, and then there's a cool twist at the end. And that's opposite a guy named David Lee Smith, who was the guy in Fight Club who was selling them icons when he says, can I get that in Patty Winkle Blue? Other than that, I have a Kia commercial running right now and auditions every day.
Well, now, you're going to have Jamie swooning here, because I got to ask you, do you sing also?
I don't sing professionally. You might catch me humming a tune every once in a while, but karaoke is not my thing. So I don't think I'll pursue that avenue.
Listen, Don, we're never going to meet. If you could just go ahead and tell me that on your Budweiser Clydesdale farm, you sit under the tree and play guitar to the puppy, I'm in.
Yeah. I mean, well, of course I do that.
So just so you know, the women, we've talked to so many women that just absolutely love that commercial, and we just love the part that you play in it. When you got that ad and you were reading the script, were you like, score? I mean, was that like a big get?
Yeah, I tell you what, the first time I went in, and some people were asking about that, and the first commercial, I really connected immediately with the script. There's not much of a script, but you get the storyboard and the explanation of the current. And I really, some things you don't, you have to really work to get your placements in the emotional current. But this one, immediately I knew exactly what was going on. And then the second one, when they showed it to me, I was, like I said earlier, I was like, oh, man, you guys, this is awesome. So it was, they're just, say again?
I said they just slayed it. They killed it.
They killed it. They really killed it. It was really fun stuff.
And so did you know that you were going to do a sequel to that ad, or did they come to you this year and say, hey, we got an idea?
I did at the time of the first one. I did not know I was going to do a sequel, but I got a few friends from set, and they started sending me Facebook messages going, "I think they're going to do another one, Don. I think they're going to do another one." I was like, "Don't tease me, don't play." And then lo and behold, absolutely. Here we are.
Yeah. So, are we? What is your acting goal? Do you want to do films? Do you want to do stay in commercials? Do you want to do shows? Are we going to see you on a reality show where you're handing out roses or something? What's the deal?
No, I'm not. You won't catch me on any reality TV. I'm an actor. Yeah. But I mean, that is. Why not think positive? You're going to dream big. So being on the silver screen would be great. That would be great. I've done it once. I played Neil Armstrong in Transformers 3, so I want to get back cool. there, and let's go big.
All right, I'm gonna call my friend. Our listeners know that I have a really good relationship with Leonardo DiCaprio, and so I'll call him. I'll put in a good word.
Yeah, just tell him you got a friend named Don Jeans. You need to put him in a movie. Yeah, I got it. I'll look forward to that call.
It'll cut any
Yeah, don't
day,
hold
though.
Your breath, Don.
I'll expect that by 5 today. Thank you very much.
Well, listen, we're so excited to talk to you. I hope that we can have you on again just to catch up with you, especially when they call you about the third ad when you're going to be making the babies with the girl that owns the farm down the street. I'm telling you, it's genius, and I want a cut because that was my idea.
Hey, let's keep it going. I think it is. You're on to something here, and you will definitely have me back on at that time.
Sounds great, Don. Thank you so much for being a part of the show today, and congratulations, and best of luck.
Thank you.
Don, where can people follow you? Twitter, Facebook, do you have a Facebook page? How can they follow you?
I do. You can go just search Don Jeans, my name, DonJeanes. On Twitter, and I should pop up there. I have a fan page on Facebook as well. Or you can go to my website at www.donjeanes.com.
He's kind of big time, though, Glenn. So when you do send him messages repeatedly and stalk him on Facebook, he's not the one who is going to write you back, just so you know.
It'll be me.
It'll be a year later, but it'll be him.
Exactly. Yeah.
Oh, thanks, Don. Congratulations.
Thank you.
All right, bye. I love him.
Did you start stalking him right after the last commercial?
I did. It's been a year. It has been a year. And if you recall, Glenn, I've got a little bit of...
We had a challenge
that who was going to get their guests on the line quicker. And you were supposed to get Rosie Napravnik, and I was supposed to get Don Jeans. And I have gotten Don Jeans, and how many times has Rosie been on our show? A big, fat goose egg. Zero. So
see,
I win.
It's different. It's kind of different when a woman stalks a man than the other way around. It's kind of different.
That's why you have a wife, a producer. She needs to do your
dirty
work.
Yeah, but she hasn't, if you remember right, she was part of that challenge, and she hasn't delivered Carrie Underwood yet either, so.
This is true. Probably for different reasons, though.
Very good. Very good get there, Jamie. That was a lot of fun. He's a good guy. He's a neat guy.
Oh, my gosh. Neat I'm guy. So glad that it's true that he really does own a Clydesdale farm, and there was a lady down the street with the puppy, and it was all true. So
I bet
cool.
you he had never met a Clydesdale. You notice he said a ranch in Texas. That meant it was all quarter horses and maybe an app. But he had never met a Clydesdale before then, I'm sure. That's funny. He was good, though. You know, I meant what I said. When you see most of these actors on the interviews, they suck. I mean, they just can't. They ask them to describe the movie. It's like they weren't even in it. They have no idea what the plot is. They have no idea. And he just played right along. So I knew he had to have improv training, you know, so he was good. Very good.
Yeah.
I was impressed.
I love him. I love him more now.
Yep.
Even after the baby Clydesdale and the puppy, now I like him more.
Right there in that summer dress, wildflowers in her hair. She can go anywhere on that Palomino mare. She's got Rocky Mountain ivory that she wears around her neck. And the Grateful Dead plays a song in her head. Somewhere between cowboy and hippie, she's all about peace, love, horses and me. She could end a war with just a smile. She can drive a tractor belling hay for miles and miles. She says innocence grows and right out. Cowboy and hippie, she's all about peace, love, horses and me. Doing that song that he sang about two books with different covers, but the pages are the same. As certain as a river in the spring, you seal a deal with a handshake. That's her philosophy. She can rope and ride. She likes hanging out with me. She believes that love is the one thing that can change anything. And she loves me, and that's the part that gets me. She's all about peace, love, hope.